It was deep winter in Chicago, where I spent a month every year for 5 years finishing my master's in theology degree. I'd chosen a Unitarian Universalist theological school, and that's where Meadville-Lomberg was in Chicago. In Meadville, the professors were our history makers, the people who had kept our tradition of being a liberal religion at the forefront of social change. People like Bill Sinkford, the first black UUA president, social activists like Bill Schultz, who was the UUA president and then went on to be the executive director for Amnesty International, Bill Murray, who wrote a number of books on humanism, many of the original signers of the Humanist Manifesto taught at Meadville. It holds our history. You learn history from the people who made our history. January 20th was a Tuesday in 2009, the day Obama, the first black American president, was inaugurated. And Chicago was thrumming with excitement because this was Obama's hometown. The family actually just lived up the street from the theological school. The joy was palpable as you walked down the street, and very unusually, everyone was smiling and actually saying hello to complete strangers. We all knew that the day was momentous, that the world was going to be okay now. Well, maybe not just okay. The world was now going to get on the right track, and there was finally a leader who was smart and good-looking and had worked in the neighborhoods of Chicago in the social services sector, knew who the people were and what they needed, knew everyone knew that he cared. He was going to be the great hope of liberal democratic America. Obama was going to equal the economic playing field. He was going to bridge the racial divide. He was going to heal a divided United States. That night, my fellow students and professors filled the elegant living room of the collegiate Gothic-style building in Hyde Park on the grounds of the University of Chicago. Lots of dark paintings of our theological ancestors lined the walls. Tall windows at either end and high ceilings made this space feel large. Every inch of the room was full. When the chairs filled up, people began sitting on the floor. When the floor filled up, people stood lining the walls. It was important to be together, to witness the day the world changed together. Or so was the feeling in the room that night. There was an energy in that room like a deep, strong pulsing of the human heart on the verge of breaking. I was sitting on the floor against the wall at one end of the room, close to where the television screen was. When I turned and looked at the room, I could take in almost everyone. I saw a lot of people quietly weeping, wet faces wrapped in the moment of history. In the middle of the room near the back in a row of chairs were a group of men in their 60s or perhaps a little older, and they too had wet faces. 44 years earlier, in March of 1965, these three men had responded to the call to stand with the men and women of the American South, the black men and women led by Martin Luther King, who had decided they would no longer accept being second-class citizens and would march for their rights to be fully equal to all Americans. Many clergy answered that call, many white clergy, many white Unitarians who knew that all men and women were deserving of respect and dignity and equality. It took courage and commitment to one's ideals to be one of the organizers of those events and to support the march. The marchers had been trained in nonviolent protest techniques because these were dangerous times. The threats were real. 3 activists were killed in the events supporting that march for freedom between Selma and Montgomery. James Reeb, who is a white Unitarian minister. Viola Luauzo, a Unitarian social activist and mother of 5 from Detroit. And 26-year-old African-American civil rights activist Jimmy Lee Jackson, whose death launched the march to Montgomery. In that filled and pulsing room in Chicago on January 9th, 2009, 3 men sat side by side, weeping. Three men who had dedicated their whole lives to bringing more equality into the room, into the world. James Hobert, Gordon Gibson, and Bill Murray. 3 men who had never believed that in their lifetime they would see a black man take the reins of political power. It was a night to be remembered. And now here we are. Hours away from knowing who will become the 45th president of the United States. I'm not going to talk about the candidates, as there is certainly enough information in all forms of media to meet every need. I want to talk about the tension I see and the fear I have for the diminishment of democracy. The values of equality and freedom that in the Unitarian tradition has been hard won and held high. I want to talk to you about the deep, dark divide that has been ripping apart the people of the United States these past 2 years. The spiritual darkness of an unexpressed pain. One point of viewing the struggle for truth and freedom in all our lives is the tension between me and we, between the rights of the individual and the rights of the collective or the community. In the battle over the ratification of the U.S. Constitution in 1788, the Bill of Rights was introduced and attached to it to recognize the resistance by anti-federalists to a strong federal government that had been mandated to care for the needs of the Union. In the American story, there's a 250-year distrustful suspicion of a federal government having power and not using it to take care of its people, but using the power to control the free will of its people. And this has created a great divide. It has exploited, and it has been exploited today by economic and free enterprise forces. We don't have the same historical DNA in the Canadian profile. In our Constitution, we hold up a collective trust of our government with being focused on peace, order, and good government. Compare and contrast this with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness found in the U.S. Declaration of Independence. It may surprise you that this is a spiritual conversation, as it points to the root values that we hold as a people. The American flavor of democracy holds a tension between the rights of the individual and the responsibilities of caring for the well-being of all. And if you're brought up in a culture being told that you, as an individual, have the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness, and that these individual rights are more important than your brothers or your neighbors or the homeless family on the corner, then this inherited belief traps you. Taken to the nth degree, you're cut off from what I believe is the natural human response to humans having care for each other, and blocked from feeling any kind of responsibility for others. You are shut off, literally, from our interdependent web. Self becomes the center of the world, and those outside of self, well, they are outside. I believe that cutting off the natural reaction towards generosity and helping others creates in us a spiritual crisis. And we do ourselves violence when we wound our impulse to care. We damage our integrity when we withhold our responsibilities to others. We have substituted integrity for self-protection. We have created stories of justification to protect the pain of being out of right relations with all humanity. And this darkness that every person is capable of, that every person has to some degree, is an energy that is uncomfortable, painful, maybe even impossible to live with. And eventually the ego will need to release the pain, the fear of not being true to our integral selves. And for thousands of years, people have ritualized this releasing of the inner darkness through scapegoating. Scapegoating is when you find a disposable person to project your fears and anger onto. In the book of Leviticus 16, on the Day of Atonement, the story goes that a priest laid hands on an escaping goat, placing all the sins of the Jewish people from the previous year onto that animal. And when the goat was beaten with reeds and thorns and driven out into the desert. And the people went home rejoicing, just as European Christians did after burning a supposed heretic, or as the men who shot Viola Luizzo because she was a white woman sitting in a car with a black man. Whenever the other, the outsider, is excluded, our ego has a moment of delight as it feels relief and safe from holding that pain. We can see this happening as a technique used in the Republican campaign, the scapegoating of individuals and whole groups of individuals who are designated as other. The uncomfortable truth is that hatred holds a group together far more quickly and easily than love and inclusivity. We must also see and understand that this is something each of us does. Unless we are aware of the dark pains that we carry, that come from living in a system that pits self-interest against social responsibility, that pits ideals of individual freedom against equality and justice for all, that pits my right for happiness against my responsibility to love and protect our interdependent existence. Unless we are aware of the pain of these forces, unless we are aware of these forced choices that we all carry, we will continue to scapegoat others or be manipulated by those who understand this process. These are hard times for our Unitarian neighbors to the south. Men, women, families like you and I, who have found in this liberal religion a community and a tradition that is rooted in principles of personal responsibility, community responsibility, equality of person, and justice for everyone. I know that Unitarians in the United States are afraid. Deeply afraid, not just for the results of the election on Tuesday, but for what they have witnessed in their country these past years. It is as if all that anti-racism work, the civil rights work, the equality of gender and sexual identity, economic justice work over the past century to bridge the divide. Like snow on the water, gone. Now there appears to be a greater divide than ever that has been exasperated by the rhetoric of this election. So distrust and fear and violence has been given permission to be released, pitting one American against another, one human being against another. Moving forward will be the work of bridging this divide. And who will be those bridge builders? Who will have the courage to move forward after the election and reach out to those on the other side of the divide? Unitarians have a tradition of being bridge builders. And I know that we will continue to do this work, even though it feels that so much ground has been lost. The work ahead of all of us is both personal and societal. The personal work, the spiritual work, is to own our own darkness and to become aware who we make our scapegoats. Who do we project our pain onto? Who have we chosen to be the disposable people? I ask you. Next is our social responsibility. One piece of that work is to support those who are working to reveal, own, and release their psychic pain. And we can stand unflinchingly as witnesses to where we see the pain of the world coming through, where racism and poverty, fear and greed are acted out, where disposable people are scapegoated. And this work is needed everywhere. It doesn't recognize borders. This week, the call went out to clergy across the United States to come to Standing Rock and witness the abuse of power, to witness the scapegoating of Indigenous people. Perhaps there is an opportunity here. Perhaps we are coming round the circle again. Standing Rock may be the next civil rights movement in the United States. It might become a moment in history where individualism rivals the power of community, where unfettered consumerism trumps economic environmental justice, or it might be a moment when the sanity of the common good breaks through. There is work ahead for all of us. Now is not the time to despair, but to remember what our principles are and recommit to creating the world that we want to live in and supporting our neighbors to do the same. Amen.